seconds. The countdown will come directly from the timing and firing trailer.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Quantel, opt-in, opt-in, go tape.
This is Publius bringing you A Step Farther Out. Your weekly radio message from the Man and Atom Society.
And it is Saturday, the 21st of March, in the glorious future year of 2026. And once again, I have to say, the people on this planet are crazy, and I want off. Now, what do I have to talk to you about today? Well, there certainly is a wide range. Also disintegrating bits of plastic on my headphones. That's nice. Where was I? Sorry, I was distracted by that a moment. So, I'm in Munich right now. I expect to be in Munich for quite some time. Six weeks at a minimum, and that entirely depends on the current world situation. You know, the United States, my home country, has recently done some things which are not only serious violations of international customary and positive law, but also extremely stupid. And so that's going to affect my travel plans, obviously. It's going to affect a lot of things beyond my travel plans, but it is going to affect my travel plans. Let's not ignore that. Okay, where are we at? What are we talking about today? Well, it's always hard to know where to start when you have something to say and several other things to say. But I'm going to start by talking about something that I say a lot, which is that to a great extent, scientists, more than politicians or even statesmen, are the ones who shape the fates of nations nowadays. That scientists have, in many cases, more to do with what happens in the world and in world politics than people who are officially political. And I'm going to give you an example here, which you may find quite shocking. But if you know anything about chemistry, you know Justus Freiherr von Liebig. Justus von Liebig, you may know him as being key to revolutionizing chemistry education in the early and mid-19th century, in a period when universities proudly insisted that they were for philosophers and artists and not for dyers and apothecaries. That was not what they were all about. But von Liebig insisted that practical instruction in chemistry had a place in the university. If you know a bit more about chemistry, but are not involved in chemical education, you may remember Justus von Liebig as having been instrumental and revolutionary in a number of ways, ranging from the introduction of fume hoods to the chemical laboratory, which are, for those of you who don't really know all this stuff, didn't take advanced chemistry in high school with a good lab, they're glass cabinets with a window on the front that comes down so you can close it until you just have your hands sticking in under the window pane, and the whole thing is enclosed, and then is vented to the outside. Modern ones, of course, have a ventilation fan. Von Liebig simply used a chimney because there was no electricity in those days and no convenient way to run a ventilation fan. Anything from the... So he was one of the pioneers of fume hoods in laboratories, which are crucial equipment for safe and effective operation of chemistry experiments and work. He was also one of the main movers in the development of quantitative analysis, as we understand it, being able to say exactly how much of different chemical elements enters into a compound or other composition. And then, X1 in Come even mentions the Liebig condenser, which he popularized. Again, there's a lot of things that he didn't invent outright, including the condenser, that he was more than happy to attribute to their original inventors, but which were popularized by him and made common by him and have had his name attached to them. And if you're not familiar even with chemistry as a whole, you may know of Justus von Liebig as for his studies in plant nutrition, which to a great extent laid the foundations of modern agronomy, and his studies in animal nutrition, including attempts at creating the first infant formula, which was not very successful, but tragically speaking. But the lovely thing about von Liebig was that as a committed scientist, he published and acknowledged his failures as well as his successes so that other people could learn by what he did, both when it worked and when it didn't work. But his various activities, he's remembered as one of the pioneers of organic chemistry, as one of the people who first recognized that you could have the same quantities of atoms. This was before the atomic theory was proven, but it was a very useful tool even then. The same quantities, relative quantities of atoms in a compound and have completely different behaviors, and recognize the arrangement of atoms could be as important as the total quantities of atoms. But also, he was the guy who forever changed cookery as it's practiced by Europeans and people of European extraction by suggesting that you should sear meat before cooking it in order to seal in the meat juices. So, Justus von Liebig is a name that crops up in all kinds of connections. But if I told you that he was responsible for Germany's defeat in the two world wars of the 20th century, you might think I was out of my mind. And, of course, to say responsible is an exaggeration, but let me lead you through the chain of inferences here. In order to do this, though, we're going to have to make a little side trip to a place called Fray Bentos. Now, Fray Bentos is a town in Uruguay. It's more or less at the confluence of the Uruguay and Negro rivers. It is in the east central rather than northeast, but west central Uruguay, right? West central Uruguay. So it's very far inland. But because of the way the Uruguay system, river system works, Fray Bentos is more or less the furthest upriver that ocean-going ships can get. It is also about the furthest downriver that there is a bridge to allow you to cross the river, the Uruguay, between Uruguay, the country, officially the República Oriental del Uruguay, and neighboring Argentina. As such, it was the site of a border dispute about 20 years ago in which Argentinian protesters blockaded the bridge, claiming that a paper mill which was being built in Fray Bentos was going to poison the Uruguay River, dump dioxin all over the place, give them all cancer, etc. And they simply would not accept the assurances of the people building the paper mill, the people financing it, and so forth, that they were building it to the same standards that would be used in Europe or North America, and that it wouldn't, in fact, do all those things. In fact, it would do the opposite. Instead of polluting the river, it would make the river cleaner because they were going to pay also for the construction of a sewage treatment plant in Freibenthusch, which the place hadn't had before. And unfortunately, the Argentinian government took the side of the protesters, and there was about 10 years of haggling back and forth and all kinds of really bizarre legal actions over it. But that's not what's important right now. What's important is, if we ask, why did Germany lose both of the world wars that Germany started in the first half of the 20th century? We find immediately that one of the reasons is food supply. That the British in the First World War, for example, were notorious for the amount of meat that they ate, to the extent that they lined the interiors of their trenches with tins, which had been emptied of their content of meat. The Germans, on the other hand, were starving from fairly early on. The Germans attempted to impose a hunger blockade in both world wars, of course, by using submarines against ocean-going ships, thus preventing the movement of food as well as troops and munitions. But it wasn't very effective. The British and French, the people allied against Germany, simply ate much more and much better. Their soldiers ate better, their civilians ate better, despite the food rationing in Britain and its persistence in the 1950s. Okay, so, well, what were they eating? As I mentioned before, they were eating, the British forces in the field were eating tinned corned beef. Tinned corned beef, which was produced where? Freibenthusch, Uruguay. The name Freibenthusch was practically synonymous with tinned meat. Immense quantities. Basically, cattle were slaughtered in Freibenthusch, cattle slaughtered elsewhere in South America. The carcasses were sent to Freibenthusch for processing, and the industry was enormous. They produced colossal quantities of meat in tins for export. And who founded the factory for making tinned meat products in Freibenthusch, Uruguay? That's right, Justus von Liebig. So, there's another little piece of evidence for my contention that it is indeed scientists and engineers and people involved in technology who determine the fate of nations largely in the modern world. Of course, we are currently in a period of reaction against that, a period in which the politicians, powers that be, are trying very hard to get power back, and they are flailing, and they are doing incredibly destructive things. And X1 in Belgium remarks that people liked corned beef where he was, despite not knowing what the words meant. In case you're ever wondering, by the way, the word corned refers to, in this case, the use of large crystals of salt, the size of grains of wheat. But, anyhow. So yes, we're living in a period when the traditional power-holding classes are striving very hard to recover power, and they're doing very destructive things in the course of that. And of course, just at the moment, the United States has taken the lead in the world, right? And it is really astonishing to see what's going on, because all of it is just so predictable. It's not just that it's bad, it's that it is so predictable. Anyone could have seen this coming. You know, I was mentioning, right, last show, about Ursula von der Leyen saying that Europe's backing away from nuclear energy was a strategic mistake. And that's not news. Anyone could have seen that. The people responsible for making those decisions must have known it. And it was, of course, Europe did not back away from fossil fuels in 2014 when Vladimir Putin's Russia first invaded Ukraine. It did not do much to back away from fossil fuels in 2021 when Putin's Russia launched a full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Instead, for example, you had the German Green, right, the German Energy and Economy Minister, who was from the Green Party, going to Doha, Qatar, to make deals for the long-term supply of liquefied natural gas. Well, if people in politics had any memory at all, if they would be looking pretty stupid right now, right? If people paid any attention to what politicians do and to the effects that what politicians do have on their lives, why, they would be, well, there would be a lot of anger right now. But of course, people are weird that way. They tend to ignore these things or forget these things very easily. Because what's happening right now? Well, you've got a lot of ships stranded in the Strait of Hormuz. And this was completely predictable. You know, I'm not going to say that the Iranians were correct to block the Strait of Hormuz because it is a violation of customary international law and arguably of positive international law to stop the commerce of seafaring countries which are not a party to your conflict, but it was also completely predictable that they would do that. So yeah, the United States decided to attack the Islamic Republic of Iran, or quite possibly the State of Israel decided to attack the Islamic Republic of Iran and dragooned the United States into it. And I put it that way, basically anyone who knows about the USS Liberty incident knows that Israel is not an ally of the United States. The relationship is much weirder than that. But suffice to say, the United States and Israel did a bunch of airstrikes to begin with. And what did they hit? Well, I have read claims, I don't know how correct these claims are, that the first thing that was bombed was the hospitals in order to maximize casualties from the following bombings. Now, if true, that is some serious first class, class A war crime, okay? This is the kind of stuff that they hang you, burn the body, and scatter the ashes for, okay? And, of course, what do they also hit? Oil export terminals, oil refineries, petrochemical facilities. What's the consequence of that? Well, the consequence is that the Iranians have been striking back at every oil refinery, gas export terminal, and so forth that they could reach. Certainly, especially in countries which have allowed the USA to base military forces there. The U.S., I mean, there's the criminality of this is so incredible. I have to emphasize this for you. Again, there is no declaration of war, right? Congress has not passed a joint resolution authorizing the president to do any of this. And I emphasize that partly because the folks who call themselves political conservatives in America have for decades now been demanding a return to constitutional government in the United States. By which I'm given to understand they mean that, or at least they want people to understand that they mean that power has gradually been ceded by the constitutional branches of government, the legislative and executive particularly, to unelected civil servants in a non-transparent bureaucracy, yada, yada, yada. And also they complain about power being taken by the judiciary away from the executive and legislative branches. And then what do we have now? Well, they've got their man in now, and he is completely ignoring the Constitution and simply behaving as though he is an absolute monarch empowered to do whatever he wants and completely ignore the Constitution. This makes me it makes me angry at my fellow Americans. It really does. Not just disappointed, but angry, to the extent that I allow myself to get angry, which I mostly don't. So, here's the situation, right? We have a massive crimp in world fossil fuel markets, because, of course, people have been moving away from coal towards LNG, right? LNG isn't moving now. The facilities in places like Ras Laffan are damaged. And frankly, that's not even the worst of it. I mean, yes, right, massive increase in the prices of fossil fuels. That's bad, all right? That's very bad. Supply constraints unrelated to rise in price. Those are also really bad, okay? No doubt. And, of course, at the same time, the U.S. has been doing a bunch of other really stupid things, including blockading Cuba. And, of course, because the Russians never finished the Jiragua nuclear power station in Cuba, Cuba's entire electrical grid is based on a single complex of oil-burning electric power plants, which are now starved for oil, and so the Cuban electrical grid has collapsed, and basically the whole island is blacked out, creating an enormous humanitarian crisis and making the lives of millions of people miserable. And for what? Just because the people in power in the United States today believe that violence and cruelty are morally good? Well, to hell with them. And I'm afraid I may mean that literally, which I shouldn't. As a good Catholic, I'm not normally allowed to consign people to hell. But forget that for a moment. Forget all that. Because one of the things that's happened is that we are now in a world helium shortage. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, go out today. If you've been hesitating to buy SSDs or RAM or other semiconductor devices because the prices have been driven up by the AI idiots, people like Sam Altman, buy them now. Go out and buy them now. Because semiconductor fabs, one of the things they rely on is inert atmospheres of helium gas. And the Qatari helium production facilities are shut down with no indication of when they will recover production or how much production will be recovered. Because as I've talked about on this show before, helium is produced in the interior of the Earth by radioactive decay. It filters towards the surface and escapes into space, basically, diffusing very slowly through rock formations, moving somewhat more quickly through pores and cracks and faults. But often it gets trapped, at least for a while, in gas reservoirs. And when we tap those gas reservoirs for fuel, we can separate out the helium. Now, for the longest time, the United States government paid people to do this because helium was considered vital to national defense because it was required for airships, which are very effective in anti-submarine patrols. Incidentally, did you know the United States submarine Charlotte sank an unarmed Iranian warship returning from the International Fleet Review in the vicinity of Sri Lanka? That's just disgusting. The captain of that submarine ought to be court-martialed and hanged. It's disgusting. And again, he had no authorization to do so without an actual declaration of war. Anyway, there is a shortage of helium. And yes, it might be possible to retool some of the uses of helium to use other inert gases, but that's going to take some time. As it is, semiconductor fabs are dependent on helium, and they are going to be starved of it. One of the reasons they're going to be starved of it, even though they can afford to pay a lot, is that there are other uses which helium is going to be rationed towards, because it's needed for example, MRI machines. It's also needed for some space launch vehicles, because helium is widely used to pressurize tanks, particularly tanks full of liquid hydrogen. Now, there are other things you can use to pressurize tanks. Boil-off gas, for example. You've got a tank full of hydrogen in equilibrium with gaseous hydrogen. You can use hydrogen gas. You have a tank full of oxygen in equilibrium with gaseous oxygen. You could use oxygen gas. But if you want to supercool your liquid oxygen, for example, you may wind up using helium. Off the top of my head, I cannot recall exactly what SpaceX does. If they're using boil-off gas, then their launch rate may not be affected. But anybody who uses helium, their launches are going to be very much affected. They may need to shift what you may call a critical, crucial, important, and sometimes national security payloads to whatever is available, which may result in a significant drop in the launch rate of Starlink satellites, which is honestly probably all for the best. So yes, space launch operations around the world are going to be affected. As I say, it's likely that, national security and other crucial space missions will be preferred for receiving helium, but still that's going to put a dent in less crucial space launches, if only by driving the price up, driving up the open market price. Lots of stuff is happening here. But as I say, if you've been hesitating to buy semiconductor items, buy them now. Also, speaking of space launch, the Canadians have announced that they're going to start a new commercial spaceport. And what's surprising me is that they're doing it at Canso, Nova Scotia. I do not know why. I'm baffled. Because, of course, Canada already has a space launch site available at Churchill Bay, Manitoba. I can only assume that they concluded that Canso is much more accessible by sea and air and land transportation than Churchill is. There is a railway that goes to Churchill, standard gauge railway with frequent trains, I mean, as frequent as they are. And of course, during the summers, you can bring ships of any size up there. And of course, it's just why it at least used to be a major grain unloading port. So why they would prioritize Canso over Churchill is unclear to me. You know, the range facilities and everything were already established at Churchill. But it may be a matter of putting more priority in towards economic development of the Atlantic provinces and less towards economic development of Manitoba. Dunno. Anyway, I will also mention that this past week, while I was in provincial Spain, I rode a meter gauge diesel railway out of Cartagena to its end and then back, because there wasn't anywhere else to go from there, and then an electrified meter gauge railway in Mallorca. I rode that from Palma de Mallorca, which is one end of the line, to Manacor, which is the far end of the line, and then back. And I mailed my postcards from Manacor, although I may have addressed them from Palma de Mallorca. So you may get a postcard from me. If you're listening to this, there is a possibility you will get a postcard mailed from Manacor, the far end of the railway line in Mallorca. I failed to ride the preserved 3-foot gauge, which is 914, line in Mallorca, which is preserved as a tourist thing, but also serves as a working railway. Anyway, but if you want to send me mail, Post Office Box 1035, Fort Worth, Texas 76101, United States of America. If you want to encourage me, paypal.me/PrometheusLives, patreon.com/man_and_Adam, and